Hi, my name is Mike Yip. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on maximizing recoveries during tax season. For the ARM industry, this is the playoffs. Between now and April 15th, individuals across the country are collecting their income tax refunds, and that additional money is a great source of funding to pay off old unpaid debts. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Microbuilt. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I also wanted to take a minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, including the Daily Digest email newsletter and the weekly Getting to Know profile, as well as hosts webinars like this and delivers information across a multitude of communication channels. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Jacob Corlean is the chairman and CEO of Capital Collection Management, which is located in Syracuse, New York. He also serves as the vice president and education chairman for the New York State Collectors Association. Jacob has been in the debt collection industry for 10 years and has received a professional collection specialist, credit and collection compliance professional, and scholar designation through ACA International. Mike Hiller is the vice president of collections for American Profit Recovery. He joined the company more than a decade ago as an entry-level employee. He's a licensed collection manager in Michigan and serves as a subject matter expert for the Michigan State Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. Ed Sala is the owner of Acer Capital Recovery, a collection agency that specializes in medical and healthcare. Ed has been a member of the collections industry for nearly two decades, having worked his way up to owning his own collection agency. He has played an active role within ACA International and is a very respected member of the ARM industry. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by me with our three panelists. We encourage you to submit questions and we will get to them when the discussion is concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. Also, today's webinar is an audio-only event. A recording of the event will be made available in the coming days on AccountsRecovery.net. So if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing anything. Finally, before we launch into the discussion, I want to read the following disclaimer. The information shared today is not intended to be legal advice and may not be used as legal advice. Every effort has been made to assure this information is up to date. It is not intended to be a full and exhaustive explanation of the law in any area, nor should it be used to replace the advice of your own legal counsel. Any opinions expressed are the opinions of the speaker and not of their organization. And with that, let's begin today's discussion. Ed, let's start with you and let's sort of set the table first. At what point do you start to adjust your operations for tax season? Ed, dead there.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was on mute. We start ramping up tax season around December 1st. It's easier to put a consumer on a payment arrangement that's going to extend until tax season with the intention of having it paid off or settled at that time. We start ramping up our letters around that time also. So right during holiday season when we started.
Excellent. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, pretty similar. You know, between the holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas, we're thinking about it. We're putting plans into place, and then we're executing it come the first quarter of the year.
And let me ask you a quick follow-up, Mike. Is this year fairly typical compared to previous years and how you approached and ramped up for getting ready for tax season?
2018 is, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's on our mind all year. We're always thinking about, you know, the income tax time, the first quarter. You know, retail has the fourth quarter and collections has the first. So we're always thinking about it. But, you know, one of the things to keep in mind is your inventory. So depending on how long you hang on to inventory, which is based on your clients, of course, is going to dictate how big of campaigns and how much to adjust. So we have the privilege of hanging on to it basically until the statute. So our inventory has been very similar after year seven in business, for obvious reasons.
Excellent. Thanks. What about you, Jacob? Can you talk a little bit about how your agency approaches getting ready for tax season?
Sure. Yeah, we, you know, very similar to both Mike and Ed. We're starting basically towards the end of, you know, middle to end of December is when we'll, you know, start ramping up our letters and getting those sent out. And we'll start a little bit before that in making sure we have, you know, the correct contact information, correct addresses. And then we also do a collectability scoring so that we can prioritize the accounts that we have.
Is that an approach that you've kind of honed over the years, you know, as you've had your own agency and as you, you know, as you sort of learn from previous tax seasons?
Yeah, definitely. So we, you know, like to be very efficient with our collections team, being a little bit smaller of an agency. So we try to, you know, we've kind of built this out through the years and, you know, try to hit the so-called low-hanging fruit. And then move on into the, you know, the additional ones.
Now, let me ask you, Jacob, how long does this process continue? Do you go right through April? Do you go beyond April? How long do you sort of keep that ramped up activity going?
We'll continue through through the end of May, usually.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Is that what you do, Ed?
That's what we do, the end of May. Tax filing time, April, mid-April. So, you know, you have a lot of consumers that won't file until the last day. And, you know, their taxes or refunds are going to come back to them within a few weeks, if not sooner. So it's always best to extend our season until the end of May.
Excellent. Let's sort of look at each kind of communication channel or communication opportunity differently and try and spend a few minutes on each. And Mike, I'll ask you, first looking at your letter campaign, can you talk a little bit about how you adjust those for tax season?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the traditional thought has always been that, you know, letters don't collect debts. And that's true. Unless it's income tax time, you know, it's pretty funny. And then the same with scores, you know, scoring, we were on a webinar not too long ago with you guys, and scoring is great. And it's still kind of in its infancy. We're getting better. So, you know, we've got dynamic scoring internally and externally. But what we find, just like the traditional thought that letters don't collect money, is you could take the scores and throw them out the window during income tax time, because for a lot of consumers, it's forced savings that they don't otherwise have, and it's a numbers game. I mean, if you say we're going to send letters on our 10,000 best accounts, then that's great if that's what your budget dictates, but try 100,000 because it's a numbers game. You're gonna collect, you know, 1.5%, and if it's 10,000 or 100,000, it's going to be 1.5%. So keep that in mind as well.
Is that how you approach it, Ed? Do you look at it as trying to get as much out there as possible because basically sort of the denominator is larger, but
absolutely,
the collection rate is the same?
Yep, I absolutely agree. It's the same thing. You know, you're going to want to send out, well, we do a little bit differently because we do sue on a number of accounts. You know, the consumers that we attempted to collect for, you know, the year before, that haven't contacted us, we'll send them out a letter telling them they have X amount of days before refer to our attorney. And hopefully that letter, you know, when they open it and it's in front of them, they say, okay, well, maybe it's time I use my taxes to take care of the account. And if they don't, it moves on to our attorney and that person will 80% of the time contact them and work out an arrangement. So we do the same thing as was discussed, but we change it up just a little bit more.
Excellent. At this point, I want to stop the discussion for a minute and talk a little bit about today's webinar sponsor, MicroBuild. For more than 35 years, MicroBuild has been helping businesses assess and manage risk. They were a pioneer in the now exploding alternative credit data space, and as such have refined their products and services to deliver true business value. Over the years, MicroBuild has invested heavily in acquiring best-in-class data. They've built sophisticated systems for keeping their data fresh and accurate, and powerful predictive models for making decisions around lending, leasing, collections, and risk management. With MicroBuild, you can customize the products you need and how much you want to spend, and all of the company's products are provided through a single, simple access portal. Whether you're working in originations or debt collection, screening your potential hire or tenant, planning for growth, or keeping up with regulatory requirements, MicroBuild can be your partner, providing the insight and information you need to protect your business, grow your bottom line, and keep your company running smoothly. For more information, please contact MicroBuild at 1-800-884-4747 or visit www.microbuild.com. And MicroBuild is spelled MicroBuild, microbuild.com. Thanks to MicroBuild for sponsoring today's webinar. Now let's get back to our discussion. Dick, I wanted to just touch base with you on the quantity of your letters before we sort of get the content of it. Do you send significantly more letters during tax season than you do during the other times of the year?
Yeah, definitely. So we, you know, getting ramped up into the beginning of tax season, we'll go ahead and, you know, and start pushing out based off, you know, what our client parameters are. You know, we'll start sending out additional letters that will, you know, offer things like, you know, settlement and full offers, or, you know, a type of payment arrangement to try to entice people to reach back out as they're getting their refunds or expecting to receive their refunds.
Hey, Jake, when you send those settlement letters, do you find that a lot of consumers pay the balance anyway?
Not particularly. I mean, if we're offering them a deal, they will, you know, and it's stated on the letter, they usually will come back and want us to work something out with them.
Yeah, that's what we thought too. And contrary to what we thought, we've seen about half of all those settlement offers get paid in full in spite of the offer, specifically during income tax time. We do not see that at any other time.
Is it just merely the extra money that they have in their pockets that's kind of, you know, manifesting this change, or is there something else that you think is why they're doing it?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be fun to figure out, you know, really so we report for most of our clients to the credit bureau. So there's a difference between updating something as legally satisfied for less than the balance owed and having it updated as paid in full. So I think that's an element. But it could have to do with the average balance. You know, our average balance is going to be smaller in some of our industries, you know, in the $300 range. So maybe it's a combination of those factors.
I think it's a combination of those factors, but we also been hearing back from consumers that they don't want to deal with the tax implications, you know, getting the 1099 from the client. That's come up probably 30 or 40 times in the last week. So I'm not sure if there's a online discussion going on that we're not privy to, but that seems to be a discussion that consumers are holding.
The $600 threshold.
The $600 threshold,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
So you're getting more inquiries from the individuals you're contacting asking about this, Ed? Is that what you're saying?
No, what we're seeing is they don't want to settle because they don't want to take the tax implications on it. They don't want to get hit with the 1099 for anything that's 600 and above. So they want to pay it off. And plus, it goes back to what was said. They want to be. You don't want to see it paid in full on the credit bureau, not settled.
So the tax implication is taking the difference and claiming it as income.
Correct.
Yeah, I can see that.
But it's in the years past, we haven't really come across that.
Right.
This year.
Well, there were changes to, I mean, the tax code. I mean, I don't want to get too deep into it, but do you have any idea if that's got any impact on why they're all of a sudden more interested in it?
I don't think so. I think it's more, consumer forums, people talking online and what's getting around. You know, people are awfully quick to see what's going on if they're, you know, talking to somebody that's involved in Facebook or whatever. So, you know, they may hear from the grapevine, you know, oh, don't settle accounts if they're going to be, you know, if they're going to save this amount of money, then you're going to get a 1099. So I can only assume. I don't see any of that happening, but I can't see where else it's coming from.
So we've talked about the quantity of letters. Let me ask you each about the quality or the content of the letters. And Mike, we'll start with you. What adjustments do you make to the content of the letters that you send out during this time of year?
So one of the advantages that we have is, you know, when an account is first placed, we're sending out the validation notice right away. You know, the right to dispute and all the legalese that's incorporated with that initial contact. And so short of a bad address, we're able to send out a letter that has a little different flavor, and it's more of, we're still here. You know, it's less encrypted with, you know, legalese and more of just a standard letter. And then, like I said, the settlements, we quit doing those during income tax time altogether because of the things that I mentioned before. So the letters are similar, you know, they still have the disclosures, but it's a different flavor just because it doesn't have the full validation notice, which takes up, you know, half of that initial contact.
Got it. What about you, Jacob? Can you talk a little bit about how the content of your letters changes during this time of year?
Very similar. You know, as soon as we, you know, have accounts placed with us, we're sending out the initial validation notice. So that gives us the ability to tweak additional content, you know, in letters around tax time or any even letters in the future. So, you know, we've been working with different language to, you know, either boost payment agreements or boost settlements in full within those letters that we'll send out.
Got it. What about you, Ed? What changes do you make to your letters?
Very subtle changes. Mentioning tax season, perhaps maybe you got a tax refund. If so, you know, it's time to think about resolving this account, things of that nature, but not too much. I mean, we all see what's going on with the letters regarding suits and everything else. So our verbiage is very subtle.
So the risk of potentially getting sued for changing your letters is kind of keeping, is sort of causing you, not causing you, but it's keeping you from making a lot of changes to it.
A lot of changes to them, correct. Correct. We'll make some, but not as much as I would like to make.
This was something that just kind of popped in to me, and it wasn't something I necessarily sort of ran by any of you going, you know, in advance. I still wanted to just kind of ask before we move on, and Mike, I'll start with you. Do you make any changes, or do you do anything more, you know, sort of with non-traditional, I'll call them non-traditional communication channels like email or texting during tax season?
You know, we don't, but it's been on my list for a long time, and it continues to be something that I go back to. The uncharted territory, right? To be the trailblazer would be something special, but no, we're not a trailblazer, but I'm paying close attention to the case law, that's for sure.
And I heard a chuckle in the background when I mentioned email and texting. Is that something?
You know, it's funny because I was going over with my employees yesterday. We're discussing it, and it's funny that we don't text. We do not email unless we have permission to email. We have to have that ready. In either case, texting itself, our phone system is capable of receiving texts, incoming texts. We do not broadcast or send out texts. And throughout the day, we'll receive text messages. Who is this? What do you want? I can't talk, but we cannot reply. We have that person right then and there, and we cannot reply. So something needs to happen, and something needs to be adjusted to where, if that's the preferred method of the consumer, we should be able to reply back to them.
That sounds like a topic for a whole other webinar.
You waxed poetically on it.
I'm sure we could get a long line of people who would just echo the same comments over and over again. Jacob, what about you? Any do you do anything differently with email or text messaging during tax season? Or is that still something that you kind of maybe are more shying away from?
Yeah, so in terms of email and text message, luckily we have a pretty large portfolio of commercial debt. So we're able to send emails and text messages out on those. But on the consumer side, we're still pretty hesitant to get in too much in that side. But we will send out emails if we have prior written consent.
Excellent. Before we move on off of letters, there's a couple of questions that came in here. Let me get through those while the topic is still fresh in everyone's minds. When sending a tax time letter, do you offer a specific settlement percentage? And if so, what percentage is offered? Do each of you want to take a quick stab at that?
That's dependent on the client. We'll have a conversation with every one of our clients prior to tax season if they would like to settle. And they give us a percentage that they're willing to settle at. That will dictate a settlement letter that goes out. Other than that, that's all dependent on what the client tells us.
Does anybody have a different approach? Guess not. Okay. Ed, let me go back to follow up on something. So you have a conversation with every client prior to tax season. That's part of your...
Every client prior to tax season. You got it.
Yeah, but I mean, best practices would be, you have that discussion during your onboarding, and that way you've got the consent, what the client's willing to accept.
Understood. And we do. However, tax season, money flow, everything changes. So it's subject to changing. They may say, for next month, I'm going to give you a 50% off. Go ahead, take 50. But all our settlements and everything is a pre-onboarding or during the onboard process. This is special. This is a special time of the year. It's our fourth quarter, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that was basically for everyone else's benefit.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah, if you can reach all your clients, that's terrific.
So have you found clients to be more or less willing to settle this year compared to years past?
More. And I don't have a reason for it. I wish I did. It seems to be more. Maybe they're looking to, maybe they know that the tax threshold is now 21%, the corporate tax threshold. I don't know. But it's more.
Interesting. So here's another question. Do you send out settlement offer letters to time bar debts during tax season? If yes, any success? Anyone want to tackle that one? I'm going to guess those are three no's then, and we'll move on. let's move on to phone calls. And Jacob, I'll ask you, let's start with the quantity first. Do you find yourself, or do you plan to make more outgoing calls or do you think you're going to receive more incoming calls during tax season?
So we usually... during the ramp up, we'll get all the reps together and discuss coming into tax season. We expect more inbound calls coming into the center based off of letter campaigns or emails, and then that's really where we use our collectability scoring. Essentially, is it gives them a priority list and we'll prioritize their queues, and they will call those. you know, higher probability individuals first, and then they'll work all the way down through. But I would say overall, all of our reps are making, you know, an increased amount of outbound calls and receiving an increased amount of inbound calls.
You mentioned something that I wanted to just follow up with respect to the letters. Are your letters driving people toward a phone call? Are they driving people toward a website to make a payment? And if so, is that any change over or during tax season versus the rest of the year?
So on our side, all of our letters are basically directing people to call back to our central 800 number, you know, which will go to the first available rep. And then right now we're looking into implementing a web portal to where we can start to push people to, which will then allow them to interact with us in hours that we wouldn't necessarily be able to speak with them.
Got it. Thanks. Mike, what about you? Let's talk about the call volumes first. Can you give us a sense of how that changes during this time of year?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to make a mention of the time bar debt question too, and kind of how it relates to your question. So, you know, especially for the states that have, you know, statutes that are shorter than the credit bureau statute, you're going to experience more calls on past that debt, regardless if you send letters or not. So preparing the collectors for that is important, and having your scripts to accommodate that where the special verbiage is required. But also on the past debt sending letters, you got to be really careful. There's a lot of case law right now how past that debt and letters on past that debt can be confusing to the least sophisticated consumer. So this year we're not going there. Even if we feel really comfortable and our letters have been vetted by our attorney, just because there's so much uncertainty, but you do need to prepare for it, because you will get consumers who it's on their credit for 7 years. The statute in North Carolina is 3 years. There's 4 years there where it's past the statute for a lawsuit, but it could be on their credit. So you're going to drive up some communications, even if you don't send letters, even if you don't call, because they're checking their credit, they're getting that income tax return, and they're paying off some debts with that forced savings. So wanted to make a mention of that. As far as increased calls, there's a finite number of hours in the day, right? So how are you supposed to make more calls? Well, we do it with overtime. And my feeling is, if you're limiting your staff on the number of hours that can be worked in a week to 40 during February, March, and April, and maybe even into May, then you're missing out. And if you think you can't afford to pay overtime, I would say turn that on its ear. You can't afford not to.
So is it everyone can kind of work as much as they, you know, sort of give us a sense of how much overtime is available, or sort of how you kind of manage that?
Sure. So we have the benefit of having clients that are all across the U.S. So, you know, being in Michigan Eastern time zone, we can call till 9 in the Eastern time zone, but we can call till 10, 11, even 12, although nobody's really here till midnight. I don't want to exaggerate, but we can call after 9, you know, to Central, Mountain Time, Pacific Time accounts. And we do offer unlimited overtime as a result of that. Now, what we see is, you know, as far as payments generated, you asked about, you know, is that similar during income tax time or different? And about half of what gets posted off of our income tax campaign letters is without a collector speaking with the person. And that's about threefold what we see, you know, not during income tax time. So there are more payments made online or through the mail or to our clients even than we traditionally see the other 9 months out of the year.
So, is it just a matter then, again, you mentioned sort of the denominator, just having a bigger pool of potential money coming in. Is that why you offer sort of the unlimited overtime? Because if you're getting three times as much without having to do anything, I guess the question is, why do you need to do anything?
Right. And I think it's a fair question. And the answer is our contacts for our collectors double as well. So short of doubling your staff for 3 months out of the year, you got to make a change to accommodate speaking with twice as many consumers. So everything increases, in other words, right? There's more payments made through the mail to your client online, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's also more contacts that we drum up with those income tax time efforts.
What about you, Ed? Is it unlimited overtime at Acer Capital Recovery these days?
No, it's not unlimited overtime. not at all. And that's just because that's the way I want it. You know, they have a specific work week, and to be honest with you, it is about, you know, client retention and making money back for our clients, but I can't also push my employees to work more than 40 hours unless they wanted to. And so far, I haven't really approached my employees to do so. I think back to my days of collections, I don't want to be here 40 hours a week, you know, as a collector. As a business owner, I'm here 80 hours a week, so it really doesn't matter. They have to have that time to decompress, and I want them to have that time to decompress. I get the fact that, you know, clients want more revenue and more money, and that's, you know, fine and dandy, but my approach is a little bit different when it comes to overtime.
So then let's talk about, you know, if you're not necessarily maybe working more, do you do anything to the content of the calls?
It's smart. Yeah, it's smarter workflow. It's coming into the office, you know, excited. It's, you know, putting money on the board. It's getting people, you know, happy, and the phones are ringing. It's just making that momentum. If I feel that during the course of the day we're hitting a low, I'll put everybody in a small balance queue. Hey guys, let's get going. Let's get some momentum going to where maybe we're working accounts that are $10 to $50, and we're doing it for an hour. And guess what happens? People start making payments. They start getting people on the phone that are going to pay, and that carries over into the rest of the day, or that may even carry over 2 or 3 days. And we know how collections is. If you've been in the industry as long as I have, you're going to have your time where you're just not posting anything on the board. You have to create, the environment to that where people are working. They're going to continue to work, and they're going to work, you know, for their full 8 hours, and they're going to be happy doing it.
And if I can, Mike, I think the burnout that Ed mentioned is a fair criticism. And so what we offer is collector's choice. They can choose to work 40, or they can choose to work overtime.
Yeah. You know, in my days, way back when, it was mandatory. You had to work X amount of days. You had to put in, you know, an extra 10 hours, 15 hours a week. And I can't push people like that, because I knew how it affected me. And I don't want to affect somebody else like that. You know, but there will be our times where, you know, we may say, you know, Thursday nights, you're really not making anything. Let's change it over and make a Saturday morning. Let's work a Saturday or vice versa. Saturday mornings, maybe we're not going to do anything this week. Make anything. So let's approach it on a different night. Let's, you know, shave some hours here where we can make up hours in a prime time environment.
Interesting. Let's talk about employee motivation and employee morale. And Jacob, I'll ask you, do you do anything differently to motivate your employees during tax season?
So we... not necessarily differently during tax season per se, but we have, you know, collector games that go on throughout the months, and basically we'll have a monthly meeting just specific for the game and go over, you know, who was our top collector in terms of number of accounts collected and total dollar amount collected for the month, and you know, they're eligible for a certain prize, but it's all tied back to you know, our compliance piece, where, you know, if they receive any, you know, policy violations during our internal reviews, or if they have any consumer complaints, you know, they're not eligible for that. And they, you know, they all know that. That also ties to their commission as well. So that's kind of what we do in terms of additional incentive to motivate. And then for some reason, collectors like pizza. So, or at least my collectors like pizza. So we'll do, you know, we'll buy in you know, pizza and wings and stuff like that, you know, throughout the weeks, especially during tax time when people are wanting to be on the phone more and wanting to work more, to kind of help keep them going and, you know, just give them a little bit of extra love.
Is that kind of what it boils down to, you think, Jacob? Just sort of like you said, that little bit of extra love to kind of show, you know, to kind of get them to sort of work that little bit extra, you know, put that little bit more extra effort into it?
Yeah, I think it makes a huge difference in terms of, you know, what I've seen in my staff, you know, kind of going the extra mile, giving them, you know, a little bit extra perks here and there, allowing them to work additional hours if they want to, or to come in on the weekend and hit their queue. Really, you know, give them a sense of ownership.
Excellent. What about you, Ed? You know, what do you do differently with your, talk a little bit what you're doing with your employees, to get them to kind
basically,
of stay motivated.
Yeah, basically the same. It's just staying motivated, you know, daily contests. Get a payment, get an ace or buck, and at the end of the day, turn the ace or bucks in, you get real money. I mean, it's just staying on motivated, you know, offering different things and different perks, you know, free coffee, free this, free that. But what it comes down to is it's a self-motivated environment that we all work in. If you're not self-motivated, you're not going to do well. But if you are, you're going to succeed, and it's going to be even better for you. So, basically, you know, we do the same thing, contests, things of that nature. But, you know,
but that's
really
not necessarily any different than, that's not necessarily any different than what you're doing during the rest of the year, right? It's pretty much the same thing.
It's pretty much the same. We're going to offer out a little bit more contests because we know that people are going to be on the phone. You know, maybe their talk time is going to be a little low. So we'll offer something for talk time or their volume of calls made. We'll offer something for that too. But for the most part, it's you know, self-motivation.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Keurigs for closers.
Does everyone get one at their desk?
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
No, but the little things, for sure. And then we'll run contests more frequently. You know, we'll front-load our contest budget for the year, encourage overtime like we mentioned before. Really, income tax time, quote unquote, is part of the collection culture. I mean, if you're a farmer, you make hay while the sun's shining. And during income tax time, you know, as we said, it's not uncommon to see your contacts double. So it's very much a numbers game. You know, if you're collecting one out of every three that you talk to, then it stands to reason that if you double your contacts, you're gonna earn more in commissions.
ABK, always carrying, is that what we're talking about now? Ed, you mentioned a little bit before talking with every client in terms of what you do during tax season with their settlements. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, any other, you know, are you communicating more or less with them during tax season? How does your interactions with your client change during this time of year?
Some clients are different. We have some smaller clients who maybe send out an email to us, you know, once a month, or we'll, you know, send out a couple emails a couple times a month, or, you know, get on the phone and call them a couple times a month. But for the clients who truly care, some of the bigger medical facilities, hospitals and stuff like that, we're on the phone with them right now pretty much every other day. Tell them what's going on, what campaigns we're running, you know, what do they think about this idea? They'll approach us. You know, what can we do better on our side? So it's a constant, right now, it's a flow of information going back and forth.
So they have, I mean, especially even the newer clients understand the importance of this time of year. You don't really kind of have to sort of clue them into it.
Well, some of the clients that we have, I mean, we're mostly medical, right? So some of the clients we have are smaller dental offices or smaller other practices that only place a few accounts a month. So they're really not, they are one of, I shouldn't say they're really not some that we speak with all the time. So we do, we have conversations with them. However, for the bigger clients, we're, you know, more geared to take on their portfolio or take on their business in a different setting. So our communication with them is far more than what we would have if somebody placed us, you know, two or three accounts for the quarter.
What about you, Jacob? Can you talk a little bit about how your interactions with your clients change or you know, with the communication that changes during this time of year?
So our clients, we pretty much stay in communication with our larger clients pretty regularly, at least I would say probably once a week, just with updates and if they have any, you know, larger accounts that they're, you know, inquiring about. But overall, you know, we usually do like a touch base right before tax season just to see if they want to do anything different in terms of the settlement guides. We do get their settlement parameters up front when we have them signed into our contract during the onboarding. But, you know, we will discuss that, you know, say, hey, do you want to give us the authority to, you know, negotiate down any further than this? So then that way, if our rep gets somebody on the phone, we don't have to say, okay, well, hold on, let us, you know, reach out to our client and get back to you. We can just, you know, have the tools, give our collectors the tools or our supervisors the tools needed to, you know, get the transaction done.
Do you take any steps, I don't want to call them drastic, but maybe some might view them as drastic, you know, like where you're sort of not onboarding new clients during this time of year or anything like that? Do you make any other changes operationally?
I mean, we'll bring on and onboard clients, you know, whenever we can find them. But in terms of, you know, operationally during tax season, the only thing that we're really doing is, you know, kind of reviewing more of the collector calls and notes in the files for, you know, on our compliance side.
Got it. Mike Hiller, talk about how your interactions with client changes during tax season.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with size and scope. You know, when you're talking nearing 4,000 clients, there's no way we can reach out to everybody before income tax time. It takes, you know, years. But, you know, we do have an uptick in clients calling us, make no mistake. And so it's very important for us, the onboarding we mentioned before, and then during the client training, that we do reference, you know, offering settlements, that we do reference income tax time and what we call salvage efforts. You call it income tax time efforts, just to kind of make them aware, if for no other reason, that next year during this time, when they're getting all these old clients calling them saying, what is this bill for? You know, hey, I paid you guys. Why haven't you told the collection agency? I'm sure nobody's had to collect from a client before, right?
Yeah, right.
That we can reference, yeah, right. So we can reference what we discussed in training for that reason. And that is an ancillary benefit of sending letters too, is you will see accounts that have been paid sometimes for months, sometimes for years, that you never get notified of, that lo and behold, you unearth these payments because of these efforts. So it's something to consider as well.
That's a whole nother webinar.
Right. How to collect from clients.
Jacob, you mentioned reviewing more calls, and I wanted to spend a minute because we're talking about sending more letters, we're talking about making more calls, we're talking about increased communication. So obviously, there should be a compliance component to this discussion because I'm sure it's still very front of mind for you and the other panelists, and for everybody listening, and for everybody in the industry. So let me ask you. About some of the changes you make to your compliance during this time, given the increased amount of activity, and maybe how those changes are applied.
Sure. Yeah. So in terms of, you know, our call monitoring and review, usually during the tax time increase, we're you know, I instruct our you know, compliance supervisors here to, you know, look at, you know, they're looking probably on average 20 to 30% more calls and notes than they normally would be on a normal basis per the, you know, for the individual reps. And that's just to ensure that, you know, we're not getting any, you know, policy violations or anything that would open us up to any legal liability.
Is that just, again, that's a random sampling they're taking? They're just sort of taking, you know, just taking a bigger sample?
Yeah, yep, just a larger sample. You know, we'd like to double the sample, but, you know, we still have, you know, staffing parameters that would, sure. Yeah, that would go into that.
What about you, Ed? Can you talk a little bit about how your compliance operation changes during this time of year?
It's the same. You know, with more contact, more consumer contact, you're going to have more chances of something that perhaps could go wrong. I'm not saying it does, but perhaps. So, you know, you're looking at notes, you're looking at phone calls, you're looking at the amount of calls made, you know, in a specific week. And you're matching up notes with what a recording says. So we record all our calls. And that's a big tool for us to use to make sure that we're, you know, being compliant. So there is definitely more chances to look at some accounts, and you know, we have the tools that we need to identify if there are any issues.
Excellent. And Mike, talk a little bit about how you adjust or don't adjust your compliance during this time of year.
So this also isn't that webinar, but yeah, if you're not recording all your calls, like Ed said, please do.
Yeah.
And then like Jake was saying, you know, you're looking for a statistically significant sample size, you know, whatever you deem that is. I think it should be at least 5%, but whatever that is, you know, and then it's a numbers game again. So if it's 5% of all contacts, then your contacts increase, your sample size is going to increase, because you're basing it on that percentage. So specifically to compliance management, you know, as long as you got a robust compliance management system, I would say trust it. Definitely don't review less during income tax time. You know, you don't want anyone taking any privileges, especially when you're running contests and offering overtime, and you know, people might be feeling on the verge of burnout. You know, mistakes can happen, so you want to mitigate that risk. For sure. So that's specifically about compliance. And then you asked about operational changes too, or is that your follow-up question?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's specifically to compliance. As far as operational changes, you know, we look at staffing. So again, you got to be prepared. You know how much your contacts are going to increase. You know you're going to need bodies to field those calls. You know, I wouldn't recommend being overstaffed. Like I said, you don't want to go through layoffs come May, but be fully staffed and be fully trained up. You know, your new employees, if you do need to onboard some new employees in advance of February, you know, make sure they cut their teeth a few months in advance and they're ready for that cyclical income tax cycle. Hiring around the holidays, right? That can be challenging. So you definitely need to plan ahead, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about making sure you're fully staffed right before income tax, and that's holidays. So something to pay attention to. And then we look at the investment. You know, you're investing your time to be prepared. You're investing in hiring and training for the first quarter. You're investing in letters. Letters aren't cheap. But you know what type of return you're going to get based on what you've done historically. And like I said, we ignore scores. We steer clear statute of limitations. You know, we look at how many letters we've previously sent during income tax time, right? If we got a bunch of consumers that have ignored three already, then maybe we move on to greener pastures. And then something Jake mentioned near the beginning of the webinar is auto skip for address changes, right? NCOAs. If it's been over 6 months, it might have lapsed, you know, and you can pay, you know, per hit on a lot of those. Even if you have a good address, it might be a good exercise to run them through, or take a sample and run them through, because people move, right? Especially consumers who go this long without paying their debts, they have the tendency to change their residence more frequently than others. You know, they're not necessarily homeowners in good standing. They wouldn't be in collections otherwise. So pay attention to that. I'd recommend talking to your vendor and getting on a per hit basis for address changes. Even if you have a good address, it's worth it. And then track your success. So once you've invested all this time and energy and money, find out where you're getting your most return, you know, where the money come from. And that way next year, you can be even more prepared.
Excellent advice. We're getting close to the top of the hour, so I'm going to remind everybody one more time, if you want to ask a question, this is probably the time to start typing it in. We'll try to get to as many of them as we can before we run out of time. And I wanted to circle back to something you mentioned before with regards to lawsuits. Do you change your lawsuit strategy or your legal strategy at all during tax time?
Yep. Very simple. We already have the accounts measured, well, most of the accounts measured of who's going to go and who's not to our attorney. So right now is the time that we'll send over more accounts for suits than we would throughout the rest of the year. The reason being is they'll get the letter from us saying that we're going to send the accounts over, and then the law firm will file, and then they'll get the summons most of the time, and then they're calling back to the law office saying, I'd like to take care of this. So we do see a big increase in lawsuits that we send over and recoveries.
Excellent. I guess this is probably a question I should have asked, you know, 52 minutes ago, and I apologize, but let me ask each of you, so far, 2018, better than 2017, worse? Can you give us a sense of what your expectation is, how this year is going to be compared to next year? And Jacob, we'll start with you.
I would definitely say that this year is trending higher than we were last year.
Is you know, can you give us any sort of context in terms of much better, a little bit better, any sort of sense of how much better?
Yeah, I mean, right now we're seeing, you know, our initial indications that we're about 15% better than we were this time last year.
Thanks.
And then, you know, as we're, you know, obviously, you know, try to, you know, project that, you know, we'll boost that up, you know, as we move throughout, you know, throughout the rest of tax season and through the end of the year.
All right. What about you, Mike? Are you seeing a higher trend this year compared to last year?
So historically, what we've seen is from February to April, we'll collect, 30%. Or 34% rather of what we do over the course of the year. So in other words, in 25% of the year, we collect 34% of all of our collections, and we're trending right on pace with the last couple years.
What about you, Ed? What are your
sense? About the same. We're trending with the last 2 years, but I got to say, I'm optimistic about the rest of the year. I think we're going to hit a cycle in the collection industry that we haven't seen since 2004, 2005. I really think things are going to start changing, and it's going to be for the better. And it's going to help everybody, not just our clients, but consumers too. The more that we can get them to take care of their obligations, the better the economy is going to be. But I'm very excited for the rest of the year.
That's awesome. Definitely can hear that. That's a whole other, that's like four webinars you've got now. here's a question that's come in. What kind of debt are each members of the panel working? Medical, bank card, installment loans. Can you give us a little sense of the composition of your portfolios? And Ed, we'll start with you.
Well, we're 90% medical. We have a very good footprint in the Western New York area with medical clients. So if you heard them on the radio, guys are probably one of my clients.
What about you, Jacob?
We're primarily credit cards as well as installment loans. And we're starting to get into the medical space now.
Got it. And Mike?
Well, you've heard of government, credit cards, student loans. We don't do that. We do everything else.
Well categorized. I don't see any other questions, but what I'd like to ask each of you to do is maybe sort of sum up you know, one or two key points that people should take away from this discussion and how they should, you know, once they hang up the phone, what they should be doing to sort of make the most of the next, you know, 7 weeks or so before April 15th. And Jacob, we'll start with you.
Sure. I would say, you know, if you focus on, you know, continuing to motivate your staff and incentivizing them through this time of year, you know, that'll definitely, you know, your ROI on all those efforts will be tremendous. And then, you know, looking at bumping up your letter campaigns as well as your call campaigns will also pay tremendous dividends. And then, you know, also making sure that, you know, you're looking on the compliance side to make sure you're not opening up any, you know, legal pitfalls with any of your practices.
Got it. Mike, any takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, full circle. Letters don't collect debts unless it's income tax time. So get them sent out. If you're working on new letters and vetting them through your attorney, use what you got for now and then be prepared for next season. And then I would say, more importantly, you know, Ed was talking about 0405, tell stories, get your staff involved with the
tell
the
stories,
culture of collections. get them up to speed. You know, you want to motivate someone. You know, motivation doesn't last. That's why we recommend it daily, right? I think Zig Ziglar said that. But it's also true with the culture. You're telling stories about collections and income tax time, and pretty soon it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Let me ask you this, Mike, is it too late, you know, to sort of start sending more letters, or is it not too late?
No, it's absolutely not too late. We're going to send letters through April.
Okay.
But I wouldn't wait. I wouldn't wait 3 weeks to design the perfect strategy. I would be haphazard about it and then kind of figure out.
Start doing it now.
Start
doing it at the end of this phone call. Get on it. You have to get on it, because if you don't, you're going to let money trickle away. Every consumer out there that you have in your files, they probably have 4 or 5 different agencies going after them. You have to get on top of them immediately. One call, connect. Get them to commit something, a payment arrangement, a promise. Commit something. And don't forget, the best thing you can do when you're working with a consumer, make sure your staff obtains full and complete information on every account that they speak with, if they can, if they don't hang up right away. The more information you have, the better it's going to be for you to cycle back and get that person back on the line and get them to pay your client.
Excellent. Well, we've reached the top of the hour, so I'm going to start wrapping things up. Before I let everybody go, I want to thank Jacob, Mike, and Ed for their insights and their time today. Really appreciate the quality and quantity of information they shared and them taking the time to sort of pull the curtain back on their operations and how they're able to sort of make the most of this time of the year. I also want to thank MicroBuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to microbuilt.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who signed up and participated today. Thanks to those who asked questions. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for more news and more webinars in the very near future. And be sure to enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
You too, guys. Have a good one.